Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, February 4th, 2016. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm swell.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you are swell. And Dave Hamilton, how's it going?
It's going good. I am not swollen.
Okay, that's good too. So low sodium diet probably helping out with that.
Yeah, lots of water. Well, yeah. Hydrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go, Brian. Couple tips for you.
Thank you. Hold on, let me scribble that down. Let's see here. Gonna need my middle finger for this one.
I bet you are. Wow.
All green lights over here.
All right. Well, hey, I can't come up with a good segue for that. So how about if I just say our first topic today, AppleBot Legbacore, which just saying the name I think is incredibly funny. Legbacore. Anyhow, this is the company, or it's a security research company, basically. And it was started by a couple guys that are pretty savvy. And they're the guys that figured out how to do the whole ThunderStrike 2 FireWire exploit on the Mac, where you can embed a malicious payload into the firmware in a Thunderbolt adapter, and then have that deliver to a Mac just by plugging the device in.
Wow.
And these are the guys that took it farther so you could actually deliver the payload through a malicious website. Now, they never released this in the wild. This was done as a proof of concept. And
they're white hat hackers, right?
Yes. Yes. And so that this all happened in 2015. And they took what they figured out and shared it with Apple so that Apple could release patches, which was great. And then as this whole thing progressed, by the time we get around to November 2015, Apple ends up just buying the company. And the two guys that were behind the discovering this exploit, they're now full-time Apple employees working on security projects, but they're not talking about exactly what they're working on.
Well, they're probably trying to keep all the other holes plugged.
Or find them.
Well, yeah, right, find them and then plug them. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love it if Apple hired more people like this.
You know, it's important to remember that if depending on how you like to look at Apple history, it can easily be argued that their first product was, you know, a blue box, which was a white hat hacking box.
No, it wasn't necessarily a black hat hacking.
Correct. It was
thievery. It was a device for thievery.
Theft of service, most specifically, is the charge that they would levy upon someone who was in using something like that. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about semantics, I suppose. Well, and money. Well,
that's how the law works. Yeah. But yeah. So, I mean, this makes sense. It actually is literally part of Apple's DNA. Well, not literally, because a company doesn't have DNA, but figuratively, it is part of Apple's DNA.
So it's literally part of Apple's figurative DNA.
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's a good thing. I can't imagine and certainly hope that this isn't the first quote unquote hacker that Apple has hired specifically because of their hacking skills. I mean, I can guarantee you Apple has hired some hackers, because back in the day of blue boxes, I knew some people that now work for Apple, but I don't know if they were hired because
back in the day of blue boxes, you were like three.
Well, it depends. No. See, did I ever actually use a blue box? Certainly not a real like blue box, but you know, with the AppleCap modem could do it. My phone system would have alerted the authorities, or it would have triggered a red flag instantly. As soon as you blew a 2600, it would have triggered a red flag. But there were phone systems around me, very local to me, that did not, that were not, that had not been updated and still had like pulse to, or tone to pulse in their system, right? Where
wow.
you could use touch tone. I forget what it was called. I think it was tone to pulse, but you could use touch tone, but the system would convert it to pulses, to simulate the rotary dial phone, which was what used to dial numbers in the system. So, those people in, and I won't name any names here, but the people that lived in those areas could most certainly blue box, and there was absolutely no issue whatsoever. I mean, there was an issue, it just wasn't ever found because they had no security or anything. So you'd blow the 26 and then you get a hold of a trunk line, and then you could do whatever you wanted. One of those things, of course, was with multi-frequency tones, you could dial and make long distance calls with no bills, which we all sort of do these days anyway. So back then it was a huge deal. Yeah. Especially because the internet didn't exist. Right. And so it was quickly justified by various groups of people, because it was like, well, we want to all just connect to each other. And this whole concept, we're not talking, you know, it was still theft of service, but it was very quickly justified amongst the kind of, you know, fringe modem using community. Like, this is stupid. We should be able to just talk to other computers. Sure. And that's what it was used for. Yeah. All right, like, right or wrong. I mean, it was most definitely wrong by the law. There's no question about it. But yeah. Yeah, so, yes. Go ahead.
The ironic thing about blue boxes and Steve Jobs and Woz getting their start with this is that Steve dedicated so much effort to make his devices unhackable and untouchable.
That yeah, makes well, sense.
He knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we dealt with that again back in the day. I remember there was a bulletin board out in Los Angeles called the Spectrum. And it was most definitely a pirate community of Apple II people, right? So, you know, and they had a download section and you could, you know, get software, pirated software there. And Glenn, the sysop of that bulletin board, and I can't remember his handle. That's weird. Anyway, Glenn went and wrote this Thunder something. It was a Thunder. No, it wasn't Thunder Chopper. It was a helicopter game, helicopter simulator for the Apple II. And it was amazing how awesome this thing was. And they had, they were so obsessed with ensuring that people couldn't crack their they didn't want anyone to be able to crack their copy protection because they wanted to be able to sell this, which was this really ironic thing. Like, wait a minute, you've been running a bulletin board. I mean, we wasn't making money from the bulletin board, but you've been supporting this community of people that are just trading software illegally, and now that you're making software, you know, you don't want anybody to do that.
That's funny how often that happens, but go ahead.
But it happens all the time. But what he did to ensure, and I use ensure in air quotes, against this was he wrote, it was distributed on a 3.5 inch disc. It was for the Apple II GF, Thunder something GS, but it was distributed on a 3.5 inch disc. And he wrote his own format up for the disc. So it wasn't using the 800K format that Apple, you know, had distributed for it. He wrote something that got like 920K by making all the tracks sequential or something, but it was his own, you know, format. So he figured, well, people that are going to try and crack this won't even be able to read the disc. You know, you would just put it in and it would boot your computer and run the game is how this worked. You didn't have like an OS that you would boot and hard drives and all that. You just put the disc in, turn the computer on. It would run the game. When you were done, you turn the computer off, eject the disc, turn the computer off, put a different disc in, boot that, do whatever you were going to do. And it took an evening for an unnamed friend of mine who now works at, in a very high level position at some company we know about. it took him the better part of an evening, and it was the better part. He's the best programmer I know. It took him the better part of an evening to completely make an easily copyable and transferable version of this game.
Okay, and now I understand why, because I remember playing the game, But now I understand why I wasn't having to restart my computer every time I wanted to play it.
Yeah.
We'll just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, the Griffin made it happen. We'll leave it at that.
I surely it was even more of a gleefully pirated product because of the hypocrisy.
Oh, absolutely. And those guys were so mad, too.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you know, yeah, anyway. They demoed the game. Yeah, and it was I think it was cracked before it was for sale, because they demoed the game at Apple Fest, and I'm pretty sure the disc fell out of the drive at Apple Fest, and it was cracked in a hotel room that night. And when I say I'm pretty sure, it's only because I've heard the story.
Yeah, we know what you mean.
Okay. But it's interesting, right? This is and I think companies are smart to hire people like this. Like I said, this guy is the best programmer I've ever met. So why wouldn't they want him, right? You know, and it's the same thing with these hackers. And so thanks to you and all the listeners for letting me go down memory lane for a little bit there. But because I hadn't thought about that in a while.
That was a fun ride.
It was a fun ride for me too. Thank you. So, but these are the people you want. In fact, lots of the people I know from those days have worked at Apple and Microsoft and, you know, are upstanding citizens and all of that good stuff. I'm the only one that's still, you know, not all that upstanding. No, that's...
Yeah, but you have a life motto, which is really helpful. Don't get caught.
Don't get caught. Yeah, there's a reason that motto exists. Yeah, that's right. So...
You know, I'm with you. I think that that buying Legbacor and keeping the talent on staff is really smart. This is exactly the sort of thing Apple should be doing, and I'm sure they have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, actually, now that we talk it through, we know that they have been. But again, did they know when they hired these various people that they had these histories? Actually, I know for a fact that the friend of mine that worked on the original Finder but the OS X Finder, they knew. Like that's how he was hired. It was someone else that was in that same community was like, oh, we should go get him. He's awesome. And they brought him in. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, they certainly know about these new guys. And I would like to see more and more of that. I want Apple to be obsessed with the security of its software products.
Yeah.
Me too. Hey, I'm really impressed because we managed to wrap that up in time to hit the second topic I wanted to get into today.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, go us. Okay, so the deal is that that Sharp, the electronics company, hasn't been doing too well over the past few years, and they've gone through a couple bailouts in Japan, meaning the Japanese government just infused a lot of money into them, like 2 or 3 years running, just to keep them afloat. So they put themselves up for sale, and Foxconn put in a bid, and a Japanese government-run company put in a bid. Foxconn outbid by about double, so it was like $5.3 billion is what they bid. But still, that wasn't a guarantee that Foxconn would actually be able to buy Sharp, because Foxconn's out of Taiwan, and there's a stigma in Japan about foreign investment. So,
well, there's a stigma in Japan in particular about anything related to China.
Yeah, so that
Chinese investment. It's not just a stigma against foreign investment, although that exists, but you also have massive political tensions between Japan and China over the disputed territories that lie near both countries.
Yeah, so...
And there was that whole, you know, Rape of Nanking thing.
That too, yeah.
Still a few tensions there.
Yeah. All right, well... So the point is, there's plenty of reason why Sharp would have incentive to not accept a buyout deal from Foxconn.
And yet, be allowed to accept
it. But it happened.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So this just came down, and now Foxconn wants to push the purchase through really fast, and like they're trying to have this done by next week.
Mm. Sure. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. The faster it goes, the better for Foxconn.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Now for Sharp, that regardless, this is good news because they've needed to have some other company to bail them out in a big way. And for Foxconn, this has the potential to be a win on many levels because now Foxconn is in a position where they can consider themselves not just a device maker, but a parts supplier too. And the deal there is that Sharp makes a lot of the displays that end up in iPhones.
Yeah. Yeah. Clearly this allows Foxconn to, you know, sort of help close in some of that loop, especially with its Apple business, but not just with its Apple business.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's not like this is a very self-contained thing where everything that happens relates just to Apple. Foxconn makes products for a lot of companies, and they'll be in a position where they can now supply parts to a lot of its clients in addition mm-hmm. to making products for them.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating to see this happen, right? But it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally makes sense, especially from Foxconn's perspective.
Yeah, Foxconn has the money to finance additional and more R&D over at Sharp. And yes. that's the display business moves so fast. It's very, very, very research intensive.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to see that cash infusion happen, because one of Sharp's problems over the years has been that they haven't been able to innovate at the same rate as their competitors. And that's clearly been a problem because their sales have been declining to the point now that Foxconn was able to buy them. It was pretty clear to me early on that Foxconn was serious about trying to make this deal come together, because the bid that they were going up against was like $2.5 billion. And so they came in with a bid over $5 billion.
Hmm.
I mean, you would think that they would come back with, say, like a $3 billion bid and work up slowly from there. But they didn't even bother. They just went all in right away. So now we just wait and see how quickly they get the whole deal to wrap up.
Yeah, it sounds like they don't want any. They know the old adage, time kills all deals, right?
Right. And I'm sure they want to avoid any possibility of seller's remorse.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Confucius said that.
Yeah, well, if he didn't, he should have. That's for sure.
The interesting thing to me is going to be if they in any way try to move Sharp's production out of Japan to Taiwan, China, or, you know, Brazil or whatever.
That would be interesting. I wonder if there's a stipulation in the deal that they have to leave Sharp in Japan.
That would, yeah. You would think that my assumption is that would be the case, but I have no information to that effect.
And neither do I. I'm just speculating. Yeah. All right. So there you go. Foxconn is buying Sharp.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And not a deal that I was seriously expecting to come together, but there it is. And we're pretty much out of time. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely.
Always great to have you. And Dave, thank you for being here. I love it when you're on the show, too.
Me, too. And it was Tomahawk GS, not Thunder. Tomahawk GS was the game.
GS.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I miss my GS. I still have it. It still works.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, I never had a GS. I had an Apple IIc. That was the only Apple II that I owned, and then went right from that to a Mac SE 30 in 89.
Nice. I went from a Franklin Ace 1000 to an Apple II GS.
Oh, I wanted a GS so bad. Oh,
It was as cool as you think.
I know. Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Yep.
Yeah, I built a audio input card for mine, which I didn't even realize I could, but I learned out of one of the magazines that we could get back in the day. Good times. Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, hey, listeners, thank you for joining us. It's always great to have you here, especially on an episode where we kind of make a little run down memory lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So join us again tomorrow. We'll see you then.